The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets. I am John Heumann, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Jamie Constable of Singer Capital Markets for our regular macro catch-up. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm okay, thanks, John. Very good to see you again.
Yep, you too. So yeah, since we last spoke, things haven't really got much better, I think it's fair to say. You know, particularly on the sentiment front, everyone seems very, very gloomy about the state of the markets and the economy. I mean, what's your take on what's been a very difficult summer, but both on the sort of economic and markets front and geopolitically, things have taken a turn for the worse as well.
I think we've got this kind of divergence at the moment, really, where we've actually pretty bullish on markets per se, particularly UK market. In particular, well, I'm sure we'll come on to that in a minute as to why. We think the interest rates have peaked, but then you've got the geopolitical situation where it just keeps throwing them in stones at us, basically, doesn't it? So the latest being, obviously, Middle East and what's going on there, which, and as we all know, one thing the market doesn't like is uncertainty. And we've now got another layer of uncertainty on top of all the other layers that we've had up to now.
Yeah, of course, things are still rumbling on in Ukraine. Even if it's not in the headlines quite so much, the Middle East has obviously taken centre stage there. And obviously that has massive implications for certain markets, oil in particular. Let's start with the UK because, we obviously look at the small cap markets quite a lot at Vox, and the aim all share is on its knees. Lots of companies, getting taken out at what seems to be sort of very, very, lowly multiples. What is going to be the turning point for the UK?
Well, I mean, the trigger, if we all knew the trigger would be on that proverbial desert island, said thank you very much, just pressing, putting our money in before it happened. I think you made a very good point there about the takeouts of the UK market. I think we certainly think the UK market is very cheap. 20%, over 20% of the all share is on a single digit PE. Now, that is quite a lot of stocks when you think about it. And even AIM, which is, as we're led to believe, full of loss makers, 20% of nearly 20% of AIM is on a single digit PE. So those companies are making profits. And PE, as you've just said, obviously agree with us because there's two companies a week at the moment being taken out. And those valuations that they're being taken out at, if you look at the one last week for Ken and Carter, that only went back to the end of 2022. And funnily enough, there are no irrevocables on that one. And we're starting to get some of the investors coming out now and saying, hang on a minute. If we look at this on anything more than a 5-minute view, these stocks are being taken out too early valuation. And Killen Carter, one of the overseas shareholders, came out end of last week saying, "Hang on, this is ridiculous." So I think looking from the bottom up, we've got some very cheap stocks out there. Okay, the economy is flatlining probably in the UK at the moment in terms of growth. But 20% of the market's on a single-digit PE. So that's discounted in valuations.
Yeah. Why do you think, there is so much, gloom towards the UK market? Do you think, and so much short-termism, do you think there is a conflation of what's happening in the economy and what's going on the markets?
I think it's been a combination of a lot of different factors that have added up over the years for the UK market. Obviously Brexit, we took us out of Europe, so then we weren't included when people wanted to put asset allocation towards Europe. That didn't help. So you had to make an actual distinct decision to say I want to go into UK rather than if you bought the whole of Europe. UK was the largest market in Europe, and actually still is again now. Now a lot of the luxury goods companies in France share prices have fallen back again. So that had part of it. Uncertainty again, post what was going to happen when we came out of the EU. Again, that doesn't help for investing as well. So there was that. And now I suppose we're moving into general election next year and a bit of uncertainty there. But the overseas investors have been buying the UK because 56% of the UK market is owned by overseas investors. Obviously, we had the pension funds switching into bonds as well. So that didn't help. But you added all that lot up and that's really what's hit the market. And I think the most recent part of it has been the private investors, retail investors, they've kind of looked overseas more as they've become more sophisticated potentially. And they've made good money by going, certainly in the first 6 months of this year, by going into US tech stocks, particularly the mega caps. Mm. They, of course, are now coming off a little bit. And we certainly think that now is where the value is now is the UK market.
Yeah, certainly some of the bigger US companies do still look somewhat expensive, shall we say? And we've got earnings season coming up over there as well. You know, should we be worried? Are we worried there's going to be some big earnings misses that can you know hit sentiment even more?
Well, I think the US, we don't cover, so I'll leave the US. We've got a lot of tech stocks this week. We'll see what they come out with. They're very good at managing expectations, of course, in the States. They tend to massage them down ahead of the numbers and then look to surprise the upside. And last week we had the financials, which were generally pretty good, the financials numbers, the banks in the US, obviously helped by net interest income there, helping them there. So generally today, the numbers have been okay. And we've seen some warnings, but not huge warnings. But if we move back to the UK, what's going on in the UK? Yes, we're getting downgrades. But we're expecting to get downgrades. The market's on, as I said, not among companies on single-digit PEs. But what we're starting to see now is that companies aren't falling anywhere near the extent of the downgrade. So, and in fact, in some cases, it does depend on the mood on the day. Some of them are actually share prices are rising on the downgrade. And that's the first thing to look for in the market, for actually the market's over-discounting the bad news and people are starting to look through it and for some good news to come through. So, yeah, we're not seeing, I mean, Travis Perkins had a big warning with a 25% downgrade or something like that, got about 5% on the day. House builders last week, downgrades, but didn't fall anywhere near the extent. Okay, we've had Vistry, I think, this week, which is down about, it was a small downgrade, but down about the same as its downgrade. So that's what to look for. When stocks don't fall, Marshalls is another one I should mention, really. Again, that was a few weeks ago, mid 20% downgrade. And again, the share price actually ended flat on the day on that one. So that's interesting, as what we say is that the market is already discounting the downgrade in the share price.
I mean, it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned the house builders, because obviously one of the big pillars of the UK economy is the housing market. And that's obviously been hit very hard by the rise in interest rates. But there is some glimmer of hope on the horizon when it comes to inflation and interest rates. You mentioned that you feel interest rates peaked, and inflation too, I presume, is your view.
Yeah. How we're looking at it here is peaks and spikes and lags, I suppose, is how we phrase it. So the spikes, you had producer prices spiked, went up. If you look at producer prices, not just in the UK, but in the US, across Europe and China, China's actually exporting deflation around the world now. Producer prices are back to zero or negative. So that the first part of the inflation equation is in negative, is going down. CPI is falling back. Where are we? About 3.7 in the US, higher in the UK at 6.7. We're lagging there. Europe's around 4.3. So we're moving back towards 2%, and maybe come on to that in a minute. We think 3 is the new 2 on that, but that's another point we can make. So CPI is falling back. And the third spike is wages. And what we're doing here, we're talking to every company we see about this. What do you see wages for 24 and 23? And going back to the point about lags, the longest lags you see are in wages, because you only generally set them once a year. So you move once a year. So who's lagging here? The biggest lag is the public sector. So you're still getting big increases coming through there. A lot of that, though, is in bonuses. So when the bonuses drop out next year, you won't have it kind of inbuilt into the base level number. But companies we're talking to, we saw one company last week who gave a 6% blended raise last for 2023. The lower paid getting more, the higher paid less. They see it down to around 3 next year. And I said afterwards, chatting to the CFO, do you really think, well, he said, if it continues like it's difficult out there, it could be less than 3. So that's wage increases halving year on year. So we don't see much talked about wage price spiral. We don't see that happening. It's all about the spikes and then the lags coming through on all these numbers. So inflation, we think, inflation was caused by a supply side shock. It wasn't caused like in the 70s where it was high and just went higher, 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 higher for like a decade. This time it was a spike up, a spike down, and we'll see the same in wages, we believe. And you could argue, in fact, that actually the interest rate rises haven't had much impact on inflation at all, because it wasn't inflation that the central banks could control that caused it. It was supply chain. It was supply shock that caused it. that actually what we could see now, Ukraine, of course, had bigger impact on prices. But what we could see now is that the lagged impact of these interest rate rises coming through, it's a year plus for interest rate rises. And with fixed rate mortgages, it's more than that, because you've got the lag of them people coming off their fixed rates, which, you know, it's 2 years and 5 years, the average, say, 3 years. It's the back end of this year into 2024 when the weight of people coming off those fixed rate mortgages will be hit. So you could argue now that actually rates haven't just peaked. You should be thinking about cutting interest rates now, and which is a very interesting point to make and to look at now.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that that's likely to happen? You know, we have a central bank that seems to be very backward looking rather than forward looking. I mean, you know, the interest rate rises may not have, you know, had the effects on inflation that they wanted, but it's definitely having an effect on the economy.
Well, it is, yeah. You know, interest rates. Let's go back to the UK. So 6.7, but it's going to fall. The number we get out, the October number we get in November, the next reading on CPI in the UK. We have 200 basis points, 2% dropping out from October last year, which was the energy price increase then. So we're going to see a number below 5, there or thereabout, below 5%. So the inflation number will then be below base rate. Very hard to raise and going down. It's very hard to be say that rates have to go any higher in that environment. And actually, you can argue that rates should be going down. Because you've still got the lagged impact of all those other interest rate rises to come through. So, yeah, I do think you're exactly correct. You need to start looking forward, not backward. What's happening to unemployment? Unemployment in the UK is rising. What's happening to unemployment in the US? Unemployment in the US is rising. And they're the biggest lag. You know, what jobs are really backward looking. There's a massive lag before. If unemployment is rising, then you should be starting to think about cutting interest rates, shouldn't you? And there's an interesting point for the US on interest rates. So you've got a US election next year. So the Fed will go into a period of purdah ahead of that election. So their window to open rates, to cut rates, if they're going to cut rates, is limited.
That would be a headwind for the market, were that to happen, were central banks starting to reverse that policy. But right now, I mean, certainly in the UK, you know, the consumer is in a tough place still. I mean, you know, regardless of the retreat of inflation, the consumer is looking wobbly. And, you know, there do seem to be risks within the system. I mean, let's go back to geopolitics for a second. You know, do we face another risk on the energy side of things, which could, you know, have devastating effects for the UK consumer?
I think these extraneous influences that we keep seeing. Yeah, I mean, if, say, the Middle Eastern conflict really goes much larger, and then the gas price is the important one, to be honest, rather than the oil price. Mm. The global economy is not linked to the oil price anywhere near like it was in the 70s when you had the oil price shock there. But it's the gas price. We saw that last time around, last winter, didn't we, when the gas price went through the roof. It's picked up a little bit, but not much. It always picks up at this time of the year anyway. But you EU stocks, UK doesn't really have stocks because we haven't got the storage, but we have it kind of coming in on a steady state basis through the ships. But they're 98% EU stocks at the moment. So the coffers are full, as it were. So storage is full. But yes, if you saw the conflict in the Middle East get a lot larger and the gas price really spiked back up again, then that's going to feed back into inflation again, isn't it? And yes, we do have an issue there. And then you're going to get everyone shouting about stagflation because we've already got the UK economy flatlining. Arguably, depending on which European country you look at, Germany's in a recession, very export-led economy. You are going to get that question being asked then of what should happen. And then the big question for the central banks is what do you do in that scenario? Because you've got CPI high, no growth, what do you do? And that would be a very difficult situation for markets. But I think we have to kind of assume that, you know, where we're sitting at the moment, if it does remain constrained in terms of where the conflict is, then the gas price will do its usual, moving up gently during the winter, because it always does. That's what normally happens. So we shouldn't be too worried by that. CPI will continue to drift back. It's harder to get it back now. And I don't think they'll get it back to 2%, to be honest. I think some people, you know, there's been a little bit of talk about this, but we certainly think 3 is the new 2, because if you think about what's happened, free money has disappeared. there is free money is gone now. Debt is, depending, dirty word, poison, whatever you want to call it. Debt is not a good thing to have if you're a company. So free money is gone. But why is inflation going to be higher? Decarbonizing the world is inflationary. Mm. When you had free money, we all know, you can see this in our own pocket, you had insurance funds set up in Bermuda who basically were just taking money, free money, and investing it in insurance markets for low, mid-single digit returns. Well, that money's gone now. So if you look at insurance rates, not just motor, obviously motor's a special case because of the cost of repair, but home insurance, all insurance rates have been going up and are in a secular growth phase now. So you've got that happening. And then you've got rising costs of healthcare. The flip side, it's not all bad on that. The flip side to that is you've got something like AI coming in, which could be a huge boom for the UK economy because the UK economy is 80% services. Where's AI going to have the biggest impact in services economies by making people more productive? What have we always looked for in the UK economy is to become more productive. So used properly and well by companies, we could see a big productivity gain, which is something that we've been searching for probably decades, isn't it, to be fair? So it's not all bad on that front. But yeah, we see CPI coming back. We see inflation having peaked. And now we need to start, inflation peaked, interest rates having peaked. And we look for when interest rates will start coming back down.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, you've mentioned before, you mentioned your regular notes, we're in a new phase. We're in a sort of, things have normalized from what was a strange period of, as you say, almost free money. Where does this leave markets? Obviously, it's the $1 million question. But if we aren't going back to that tailwind of cheap money, can we expect markets to ever recover to where they were before? I think people would like them to, but is that just wishful thinking in this sort of new interest rate regime?
Well, I think how we've phrased it here is we've gone from exceptionalism, which is 13 years of free money. If you want to call it free? I call it free money anyway. It virtually was free money. And we've gone from that exceptionalism of 13 years where bond yields collapsed down to virtually nothing. And I think what we need to call this is normalization. We moved back to where we were for century beforehand. Basically, we moved back to normal. And I'm a little bit surprised, to be honest, about this kind of the whole comment of higher for longer. Because are we higher? No, if we think three is the new two on inflation, where should base rates be? Where should bond yields be? If you look at US 10-year Treasury, which obviously is the key measure for interest rates globally, and you look at where we've moved back to, it looks more, the range should probably be now 4 to 6, maybe 3.5 to 5.5, which would be about right, wouldn't it? Because if we think that the interest rate cycle's peaked, and 10-year bond yields are around 5 at the moment, and that's worrying the market. But if we think that the US economy is slowing, and it's certainly going to slow with the mortgage rate now at 8%, just to repeat that, 8% is the 30-year mortgage rate in the US.
I think car loans are at similar rates at the moment, aren't they?
They are. And the delinquency factor on those car loans is going up quite markedly. They stopped measuring it, but now they started measuring it again. So that's going to slow the US economy. So, and again, it comes back to your point, John, about looking forward. The banks need to look forward. Look what's happening in the economy. Look forward. Look what's happening. 8% mortgage rates. You're not going to move house, are you? You stay in your house, you don't move. So, funnily enough, housing transactions in the US have collapsed. So we're in this the soaking zone, forget the word, whatever you call it. But anyway.
Twilight zone.
It's good for Halloween, isn't it? So we're in the twilight zone at the moment, waiting to see what happens next. And what's happening is, in our view, is that economies are slowing. The US is even going to be slowing as well. It showed up in the forward-looking data. We've got manufacturing PMIs this week, but they're already in the low 40s. Services PMIs are below 50. Economies are contracting. So what's the next thing that needs to happen is interest rates need to fall. Equity markets, particularly the UK, maybe not just in the US, but we'll come back to that in a minute. But in the UK, are discounting after the falls we saw in 2022, downgrades and a flatlining, weak economy. So the market has discounted it, which is what markets do, isn't it? They look forward and they discount. So when we start getting interest rate rises, you need to be in it to win it. You need to be in the market because the market should rally strongly then.
Yeah.
The States is quite interesting because, of course, the rise in the States, the Super Seven, as they call them, has driven a lot of that rise. And they've started to roll over, so the US markets come back. Now, if they got that kind of Goldilocks economy where inflation falls back, growth stays okay, helped by the Inflation Reduction Act, and interest rates start to fall, and the other stocks rally in the US market, well, you could get a very nice situation there. But it is a hard situation to manage, of course, to actually get your way through that. But no, we think that certainly the UK market, the valuations, PE, private equity think the UK market's cheap. The next move in interest rates is down, and the UK could be the first country to actually cut interest rates globally.
Yeah. I mean, you say you've got to be in it to win it, and I think that's a very fair observation. Although a lot of people have obviously shifted into bonds, given that you can get a very, very decent return off of them now, which hasn't been the case for many, many years. But in equities, when this headwind starts to dissipate, and you are in the market, where should you be? Presumably, some sectors, some areas of the market are going to do better than others.
I think so. If interest rates are falling, then in the UK, then obviously you gravitate towards UK exposed stocks, don't you, to start with? We are actually more bullish on the UK consumer than some. We're a little bit surprised by the fall in consumer confidence on Friday. We expected that to continue to rise, consumer confidence. I think that wasn't helped by the Middle Eastern conflict there. And that was referred to. We expected that and the reason for that is, and it's not really been mentioned in too many places, is that if you think about, not everyone has borrowings, a big part of the market have savings. So for 13 years, you've got nothing effectively on your savings. If you're in Europe, you actually paid money to keep some money in the bank in some countries. Now you can get, as you just quite rightly said, you can get 5%. Actually, you can get 6%, can't you, if you lock it up for a year on national savings. So the people with savings are actually feeling quite wealthy or wealthier. And you've got to be careful here because it's very set across a demographic and it depends what people's circumstances are. But our retail and leisure team ran the numbers on this. And what we've looked at is if you net up all the interest earned on savings, and remember we had that boost of enforced savings during the lockdown as well. If you net that out and look at how much extra income, how wealthier people are from that. And then on the other side of the equation, you look at the increased mortgage cost from mortgage rates going up. Remember, the 2 years fix is coming off, the 5 year fix is coming up. So you have to put that into the equation. The net consumer is 10 billion annualized per month, better off. So the consumer is not worse off from the interest rate rises. The consumer is better off from the interest rate rises, even accounting for the mortgage rate increases. And that we ran that forward as well, which is important. That number holds true to the end of 2024. Now, mortgage rates are coming back now. It does depend what kind of deposit you've got. If you're going for a 95% mortgage, it's more difficult. And that's because the banks obviously are more worried about house price falls. But I was seeing some numbers over the weekend that TSB are now offering something like four high fours on a 60% loan to value. So the mortgage rates are starting to come back now as well, with interest rates still good. So actually that equation, that 10 billion we're talking about, could actually expand potentially going forward if that happens. So it's not talked about very much, but actually the consumer is better off. Against that, of course, we've got the tax drag and stuff like that. And remember as well, though, that on the positive side, pensioners got a 10% pay rise, pensioners have savings. So, people going on holidays, that's why we think the holidays have been so strong, people going on holidays. And that's why airfares are so strong, because there's lots of demand and supply. And then if you're on the living wage, again, it was a 10% rise. What are we going to get coming through next April? Pensioners, well, 8.5 is the calculated number under the triple lock, isn't it? It might be a bit less. They might. Will the living wage go up by 8.5? It might be a bit less this time around. Why? Because they're close to that 2/3 of median earnings, which they're aiming for. But again, you're going to get those rises coming through there. Private sector, public sector next year, no, you're not going to get the increases that we saw. for the, you know, we ask because the inflation's falling back. But at the same time, people have those numbers locked in. So, yeah, I think that the consumer has money. We're not positive on high ticket items. We think high ticket, a lot of that's been spent already. The confidence isn't there to spend on high ticket. But experiential leisure, going out, you know, Hollywood Bowls of this world, pubs, restaurants, I think it's a good place to be. And we're still positive on infrastructure, despite what happened with HS2. The world needs to spend on infrastructure, decarbonisation, all of that, electrification, all of that, infrastructure investment in the grid. And then we're positive on CapEx as well, because reshoring, nearshoring, all of that going on. China seems to be wanting to arrest everybody, whether it's WPP or even Foxconn now. That's pushing people back to invest in their closer to home for the manufacturing. So again, that's areas we're positive on. We've got to get through for market confidence. We've got to start to see the rates falling, though, I think. But really, we need that trigger, don't we? What's the trigger, as you said? What's the trigger to drive the market up? And that's what we're all looking for. And it probably will be, okay, rates are peaked, rates are coming down, because people are still worried about higher for longer. But I think people shouldn't get into the mentality that they're going to come back to where they were before, because they're not. We're back. It's a new normal. I mean, it's a phrase that's been used historically. We're in a new normal now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it sounds like there's some sort of some signs of hope, some reasons to be optimistic. Yeah. Christmas might not be so dismal after all, seeing that everyone's got a few quid in their pocket to go and spend. We might even get a Santa Claus rally. Who knows?
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for that confidence. And as we said, I mean, if we keep losing two companies a week, I mean, the market will end up in PE's hands. So it's flows. Flows move markets. We need the flows back into UK equities. We did see it about a month ago. There were flows coming in. Then, of course, we've had the Middle East kind of the geopolitical hit again. Let things settle down again, and those flows should hopefully come back. And liquidity works both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Jamie, it's been a pleasure talking to you, as always. And let's catch up again in a couple of months when hopefully some of the optimism will have proved well-founded. Thanks, Jamie.
Definitely. Good. Thanks, John.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.